Do you need help recruiting great global talent for your startup? Check out today's sponsor, Outwork Staffing. Outwork Staffing can help you hire customer support, virtual assistants, developers, or whoever you need. You pay a one-time hiring fee after they find your ideal candidate, and that's it. No additional costs, even if your new hire stays for years. If they don't work out in the first 6 months, Outwork Staffing will find you a replacement free of charge. Interested? Visit outworkstaffing.com/startups to book a call and get $500 off your first placement by mentioning this podcast. Welcome back to Startups for the Rest of Us. I am Rob Walling, and today I'm joined by Craig Hewitt, the founder of Castos and the host of the Rogue Startups podcast. In this episode, Craig and I talk through several topics, one of which is prioritization. And we went pretty deep on that, both prioritizing things from a marketing or growth perspective. In general, when you're working on a startup, how do you think through what's a framework for prioritization? And also we talk how to prioritize balancing work and life. I also talked to Craig a bit about what it's like to be a founder and to start doing some coaching of other founders. And we also talk about what it's like to have a podcast with a co-host and then suddenly be a solo host. Before we dive into that, you should check out MicroConf Connect at microconfconnect.com. This is our online community and forum. We host it in Slack, and we're approaching 7,000 members. They're bootstrapped and mostly bootstrapped SaaS founders. Recent conversations in Connect, including a debate about magic sign-in links, how long you should spend diving into a niche before deciding on the product offer, how to safeguard your product from misuse during free trials, at what point in your journey should you invest in a conference booth, and more. It's a vibrant and highly moderated community, very high signal to noise. If you're looking to find and hang out with other misfits like you and I, head to microconfconnect.com. It's a great episode today. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Craig Hewitt, thanks for joining me on the show.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me.
I hear from a lot of folks that they really enjoy the episodes of Startups for the Rest of Us that you're on, so it's good to have you back.
Yeah, man, likewise. It's not a lot of opportunities to kind of riff and BS on startup stuff, and you're one of my favorites to do it with, so this is awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's nice to go deep with other folks that you have chemistry with. This is what people tell me about these types of episodes. There's the Derek Reimer and the Ruben and the, you know, where it's like, you just have a rapport is what they say. And you just, you have a common language and you get there real quickly and you go deep really fast on things because there's not a presupposition of, oh, I need to be really polite and walk on eggshells here, or I can't say what I really think. Or, you know, it's like, no, we've known each other for a very long time. Oh, more than a decade. It's probably like 10, 12 years, I would think.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, I came up with a few topics to chat with you about, and then I realized that last week I had some success just tweeting out, hey, what do you want me to talk about with Derek Reimer, who was on the show a couple weeks ago as of when this aired. So I did the same thing for you, and what I thought was funny was you responded with one of my favorite topics. I was like, wait, the guest responded to the topic. So your tweet said, I want to talk through how you think about prioritization, both from a marketing growth perspective, but also work-life balance and stuff outside of work with only so many hours in the day. You want to give more context around what you're thinking there?
Yeah, I think part of it stems from just being a busy founder, have my own podcast, have content I'm doing, have a family, try to take care of myself and exercise, and I'll, you know, try to have a garden, you know, it's summer, and like, find myself looking at the calendar sometimes just being like, shit, like this doesn't add up. And so something's got to give. And I sometimes think I'm not doing the right things, air quotes, the right things. And so I think that's more so is like, there are enough hours in the day if you prioritize the right things. And that's like within the 8 hours of a workday. And that's within the kind of whatever, however many hours we're awake during the week. And so, I don't know, just like, I would be very curious to hear how you think about it. And I can kind of share a little bit of what I think too, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I think we should both dive in on it. There's a few things here. There's a quote that I had in a talk one time that resonated with a lot of people. And I've said it a few times, but In your personal life, money saves you hours, and in your business, money can save you years. What that means is if you have money in your personal bank account, you can pay someone to mow your lawn, do your dishes, do your laundry. Like we, you know, have someone who comes to our house 5 or 10 hours a week and does errands and does basic stuff, $30 an hour. And then they're local and they handle all kinds of returns and just whatever, anything you can imagine that you could just that an admin can do in person. And it's $100-something or $300, you know, whatever it is. Sherry and I are two busy working professionals, both have successful businesses. For us at this stage, that is a, I'll just say it's a rounding error compared to, you know, we'll go out to a really nice dinner with friends and spend that. So it's like, that's something that, and I'm getting it. I'm not saying everyone in the audience, you have $300 to waste on an assistant who comes in. But it's like at a certain point, even early on, I started paying someone to mow my lawn. And I remember I had friends who made fun of me for that and said, you don't want to put in the hard work or like, oh, you're real bougie now, aren't you? And these were the friends that I had to distance myself from to become an entrepreneur because they had this old script. And this was, I mean, I was like 20, let's say I was 25, 26, and I was making $60 an hour as a developer, like hourly, it was contract.
Yeah.
And I could work 10, 12, 14 hour days back then, and I would get paid for 10, 12, 14 hours a day times 60. So the math was there. And so instead of me buying a lawnmower, maintaining it and doing all this stuff, I would do that. I started hiring more out. I was really guilty about it for a long time of like, am I wasting money? Because I could just go do that on the weekend. Same thing with cleaning my house. You know, that was a tough thing for me to get over, right? So that's like a very basic first one, but I think people don't delegate or outsource enough in their personal lives. And to be honest, man, is it easier to find someone to come into your business and do support, customer success, and train them on that? Or is it easier to find someone who can run errands and do laundry and do, you know, do a few things and the cost might be similar or less?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just that's a super tactical one to start with. But I want to toss it back to you in the sense of how you think about trying to prioritize these things.
Yeah. So totally on the like money buys you freedom kind of or time, you know, Dan Martell's book, really good, Buy Back Your Time. I know he's been on the show. Really, really good book from a business perspective. I've been kind of on and off with assistants actually yesterday, 2 days ago. I signed back up with Zirtual. That's kind of how I had my assistant before. Signed back up with them. I think they started like $500 a month for like 12 hours a month. So a couple hours a week. And for me, it's just like, can you take care of like this notice from the state of Virginia that like, I literally have no idea what to do. Like, can you just please go take care of this? And they're pretty kind of senior level folks to where you can say like, I just don't want to think about it until it's done. Please not here's the SOP and the documentation, but you know, solve this problem for me. Outside of work, what I have tried to start doing is like just less, you know, like instead of just saying like, how can I possibly manage all these things? I'm just not doing that. Like a good example is I was going to CrossFit for a while and it's a really great workout. It like at 44 now, it's maybe a little too much for my old ass. But one of the challenges was it's at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning. And so then that's very fixed and the rest of my day has to fit around that. And so I'm like, no, because what I need is like a thing that can fit around my schedule. So it's like, let's break down the rigidity and the barriers to where I can just kind of do my stuff whenever and however I want. So I think that it gets at the same concept as like, how can I bend the reality to fit more like what I want? So that's been like away from work. Something I've really tried to do is just like optimize for convenience as much as possible. We haven't gotten someone local, but that's probably the next step is get somebody a couple hours a week to help with the house or stuff and groceries and things like that.
So I actually contacted Zirtual and like 4 other VA agencies and said, do you have anyone? I want someone local and I want an EA level person, but I want them in Minneapolis because I want them to be able to do the stuff you're saying, which is like this tax notice or like I got something from my insurance company the other day. And again, it's like, I need you to make a phone call and I need you to figure this out or I need you to change this plane flight. And it's going to be like 30 minutes on the phone with Delta. Can you just do it? But I also want you to be able to run these errands because there's just enough in a week with us around. And we actually found a friend of a friend who's doing it for us now. But more than that, I like what you said. It's not just about hiring stuff out. It is about doing less. Like this is the thing I realized is, again, going back to when I was 25, I would sometimes code 12 or 14 hours a day because it was just like, I'm going to make money because I need to make money to pay the rent and to like be self-sufficient. And Sherry and I were married already at that time. And then as I started becoming an entrepreneur, I transitioned into that mode where I'd work all day and then I would entrepreneur all night till one in the morning or something. And so I would work a lot. And then even as I became an entrepreneur, I was like, well, I will just grind it out. That's how I will win. And that was perhaps a good choice early on, but there's a question mark on there because grinding it out and working 12, 14 hour days, which again, I did as both a contractor and then doing products for a while, back when I had time, no kids, all this stuff, I worked on a lot of the wrong things. I wasted so much time. I mean, probably half my time was wasted.
Yeah.
Maybe more, you know, where I just didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't asking for advice. I wasn't kind of following rules of thumb, didn't have a plan. And I just flailed around and did the next thing because I was like, well, I'm going to keep working. I did stuff. And it took me a very long time to hone that ability to say no to a lot of things and pick. There's no one right thing to work on.
There's a whole lot of wrong things.
But there's a whole lot of wrong things. Yep. And if there's 100 ideas, there's probably like three or five that are probably in the 80, 90% correct. You know, it's in this direction. And how do you identify those, right? How do you do that? Do you think about it?
Yeah. So I have a really good one there. So this is on the work front. I have several people that I work with. Actually, I wrote about this in my Founder Insights newsletter last week. It'll show up as a blog post on craighewitt.me if you want to go check it out. But what I've started doing is like really leaning into having several different coaches in my life. So like I have a wellness coach from My Body Tutor. Amazing. Like if you check it out, if you haven't, I have a sales coach now. And like, I'm a sales guy, so I should know what the fuck I'm doing. But I think it's a testament to like, even if you are the kind of subject matter expert, having an objective third party, unbiased person to bounce ideas off of and say like, hey, I want to grow this part of my business. What do you think about this or this or this as an approach? And they, with probably a whole lot more experience and context and perspective, would say, well, fucking obvious, just do this. And then like I have a business, like a founder coach who at like a higher level, like strategic, I'm able to say like, hey, we want to do this, or we want to acquire this company, or we want to raise more money or whatever. And he's able to like really give me the same kind of really honest feedback. So that's something I've really benefited from a lot in the last year or so, is like just not putting all the pressure back on me. Cause like as founders, you got to make so many decisions every day that, especially as a solo founder, to say like, I got to make this other decision. And then it's the next one and the next one and next one. And some of them are really important. And you have a mastermind group or you have a mentor or whatever, but like, you got to have somebody to talk to, I think is the point. And to me, like paying someone who has actually done the thing is way more valuable than pretty much any other peer group. Cause that is then the answer. And you have a relatively high confidence that that's right.
Yeah, if you can find someone that you trust in a domain to kind of give you their best advice, and here's the thing, if you trust them, it's likely they will say things like, I feel very strongly that you should do X, or I'll do this all the time with Tiny Seed Founders. I'm on the fence, I'm going to be honest. I think you have two viable options. Let's name the other, there's five total. I think these three are garbage. I think you have two, and I'm struggling to know which you should do, but it's pretty obvious it's one of these two. And then I'll pass it back. What do you think? What's your gut? Because you know your business better. You know your customers better. You know whatever, the space better than I do. I know the best practice is probably better than you do. And we'll do that. I think a good mentor, advisor, or even friend, mastermind, whatever, couches things like that. They're not so certain of everything. But then sometimes, it's really, really obvious what you should do. And it's like, no, I've seen exactly this 10 times and 9 out of 10 times this was the right answer. That type of thing. You can get to that point of certainty. That's a huge win. Mm-hmm. You know, these days I try to think about how I make decisions, and usually I try not to make a ton of decisions all the time. And that might sound weird, but it's like, you have to make a lot fewer decisions than you think. And the key phrase, have to. There are a lot of things you just don't have to decide. And I think in the early days of a startup, you have to make a lot of decisions quickly of like, what am I building? What are we doing? ICP, I got to move faster. You get even a little bit in, because Tiny Seed was like that. Microconf was like that. Drip was like that. But you get to a point where it's like, oh no, we don't need to decide about that. We're just going to let it run. Like what's working is working. We're going to keep doing that. That's a skill. You know, they often talk about retail investors, like just consumers who like day trade and they buy this stock and then they buy this index fund and then they sell it because they read something in Bloomberg and then they do this and that. And it's flailing. It is tax disadvantaged. It is trade. It's just almost no one does that. You have no advantage in that. And I feel the same way about some founders who are like, it's like, you know, what's working is you right now for you, it's like SEO and cold outreach or whatever it is. Yeah. But it's like, it's kind of a grind. It's like, no, It's always a grind. I don't care if it's a grind. Is it working? Yeah. We're growing $2,000 MRR every month. Then why would you make any decision? Just keep doing it. You know, it's like, I know that you want to day trade. You want to do something more exciting. The most exciting thing is new MRR.
So I have two things around this because this is really hard, right? We are at the point in our business where it's getting a little boring in a good way. To your point, and that the challenge one is you as a founder accepting that like, hey, just tune out all of that stuff and focus on the stuff that's working. Like you have to get over that. Then what I found is you have to get over this next hump, which is you have to relay to your team that that's how they need to think too. Because hopefully your team is like, oh, hey, what if we do this? What if we build this feature? What if we support? What if we do this? What? And I think about this movie, The Yes Day, but in the movie, they're like, I'm the fun guy and you're always the one that's saying no, like to the parents. And like, I feel like the parent that always says no to the team because they're like, hey, what if we do this? Hey, what if we do that? And I go, no, what if we don't do any of that stuff and just focus on this really narrow thing? And what you're saying to the team is like, hey, we have to focus and prioritize. If you do it wrong, which I think I might have at the beginning, what you say is like, let's just dial back like the intensity a little bit. That's not exactly right, but it kind of is, right? Because what you're saying is like, we're going to do less, we're going to do it better, and it's going to be better for the company. It's a very different kind of mindset as a founder for sure. But even like, I think if you have entrepreneurial team members, they go, whoa, like I only have to do this one thing. That's crazy. Like I have a little bit of like insecurity around that.
Yeah, I could see that. And that's where I'm guessing that's where sprints were invented. Like, we're going to do a sprint and we're not going to, whether it's 2 weeks or 3 months, you know, you hear marketing sprints are sometimes 2 or 3 months and development sprints are 2 weeks. Lock it in. Can't change it.
Yep.
Pretty much unless there's a catastrophe. Because everyone has ideas and some of those ideas are good. And there's the Steve Jobs quote I mentioned offline, but I think that I quote him in my book, whatever. I don't like it when people use Steve Jobs as an example, blah, blah, blah. You know this, like he's such an outlier. It's like, I'm going to use it to justify his really dumb thinking. Oh, good. But Steve Jobs says, you know, focusing on stuff and building great things is not about the focus. It's about saying no to hundreds of good, of really good ideas. And I think about that quote so often of like, what is the one or two things that I should really be focusing on? And then my next step, if I'm going to do something in the business is, how can I find someone who knows more about this than I do? So like when we were going to start YouTube, we futzed around with it for a while. And I realized pretty quickly, like I have to be able to pay someone who just can get us there faster. And we did, we hired a consultant and they were not cheap. They were several grand a month for advice, which I struggle with as a total cheap ass, a guy who grew up without money. But I'm like, dude, if I can grow this, you know, this channel, it's worth it. And it did, right? We're at 80,000 subscribers or something. We grew very quickly. And there's other stuff I've looked into, like, it's like, oh, should we do TikTok? Should we do LinkedIn? Should we do whatever? These are decisions I have to make. But I make them very slowly until I'm pretty damn sure that it's the right one. And then I will go deep and I will go really fast. And I will spend a lot of money to have someone tell us exactly how to do it, maybe even to do it for us, depending on what it is that needs to be done. And then I will go all in. Like YouTube for us was, I was shipping 52 videos a year at relatively high quality, if you go watch them. And, you know, 15 grand, 18 grand a month spend on that. Which is, that's a lot. You might say, wow, that's a lot of money. It is a lot of money. But I deemed that I was either going to do it or I was not. What I wasn't going to do was take that 18 grand, split it among, well, let's try 3 or 4 things. Because that's, guess what? Really low probability that any of them would have worked.
It is like, what's a good idea that you can execute on? And that's your skills, the people on your team, the people available to you, the money, all that kind of stuff. And then the one that, the thing that this makes me think of is this book, Who Not How, and I'm blanking on the name.
The author.
But that's it, right? It's like when there's a problem at a point when you have the resources, it's who can I hire to help me solve this or solve it for me? And then your goal is just to define what good is and let them go.
Dan Sullivan.
Just amazing guy. Yep.
You recommended that book to me a couple years ago and I got the Audible version of it.
I think that one's from Ruben.
Is it? This is what happens,
Ruben,
right?
Ruben the Prince.
Totally. Yeah. Ruben has the A method for hiring. That one came from Ruben. Yeah. There's a few.
Yeah.
There's a few of those. Yeah, so it's interesting. When I make a hard, I make fewer decisions than most people these days, I used to make all the decisions. I'm going to make the decision, do the stuff and flail around. And it's like, that was something that as I matured, I realized, that was not the right way to do it. I should make fewer, more important, more focused decisions. And as a result, my decisions are bigger and tend to have bigger consequences, I'll say, because when I committed to this money and this recording these videos, which is a lot of chunk out of my week every week, and I wasn't very good at it, it took me a long time when I started. So I knew I was investing. But when I make those decisions, I think, you know, I mull it over for like a few months usually, if I have that luxury. Sometimes you don't, but several weeks. And then I start going to people. So, Einar, what do you think about me doing, you know, what do you think about this whole thing? We have this idea. So, Ruben, what do you think about that? You know, and each of them has a different perspective, right? So, Sherry, what do you think about this? And it's like, I get all these different inputs, mastermind, co-founder, you know, whatever it is. I'm talking to a listener right now of like how to make hard decisions, right? It's like, who do you have in your life? And if you don't have someone, then you might need to hire someone. Like you said, you have coaches. I have a therapist. I've been seeing a therapist for years on and off. And it's not because, you know, there's this stigma around it of like, well, you're seeing a therapist, you must have wrong with you. And it's like, A, all of us have wrong with us. So you know, please don't kid yourself to thinking otherwise. For me, it's self-reflection. She'll tell me like, here's what I'm hearing you say. And I'm like, huh, that's, why did I say that? You know, she's like, I don't know. Let's figure out why you said that. You obviously are programmed to have this, you know, this limiting belief maybe. And so sometimes I'll talk stuff through with her as well. I wouldn't talk through a YouTube, you know, launch, but I would talk through a hard decision that I think has a kind of a mental component, or that I'm sometimes, you know, what's the right decision, but you can't do it. You won't do it. And you're like avoiding it because it's making you uncomfortable. And that's when I'm like, I need someone to tell me, I need to talk through why I'm uncomfortable and figure out,
this is okay. Yeah.
Is it because the way I was brought up as a kid? Is it because I didn't have money in my 20s and I'm scared of always going back to that and having, you know, or whatever, like, are those the reasons?
Yeah.
And so we've talked a lot about decision-making in professional context, which I think is helpful. I know people often like to hear, especially the folks who listen to this podcast that are further along, where it's like, oh, I'm doing a million a year, 5 million a year, like this type of stuff. We all struggle with it, right? But let's talk about the work-life piece. In terms of family time, let's just, we both have families. Like when my kids were younger, I definitely struggled. My kids are older now. They're almost 14 and 18. So they're like self-sufficient. I mean, I'm hanging here with, it's like having a roommate rather than a kid. You know what I mean? Like they put themselves to bed at the time that they should go to bed. And they wake up in the morning, and if I make breakfast, they eat it. Otherwise, they make it for themselves. You know, so it's different with younger kids. And that's one thing I will say is if you have young kids now, realize it won't be there forever. They will get older and you will be able to leave them alone overnight for multiple days at a certain point. Like it's mind blowing when I say that, right? But like we haven't hired a babysitter in years because it just changes. Yeah. You can't, right? But it's like, realize that this time is only a few years, however that few is. So with that caveat, I will say that much like making fewer decisions and focusing in my professional life, when I'm with my family, I try to have really interactive, like meaningful time with them where it's like, dude, let's play a game together. Or like, let's go, like my 17-year-old, he's almost 18, is home from college for summer. And I'm like, I'm off calls at 3 today. You and I are walking somewhere. And we'll go on a walk for like an hour, 90 minutes. We'll go somewhere, we'll get ice cream. It's a great day here in Minneapolis. And I'm just very deliberate about that. And we don't need 5 hours together tonight. That 1 hour, we will have so much conversation about so many things, about our lives, about what I'm thinking about. He asks me about work and like, what's going on with this? And are you stressed about that? And
that's cool.
You know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah,
it's not all perfect. It's not all amazing. And it's harder if my kids were 2 and 4, it would be a different story, right? Both of us can weigh in on there because we've been there. But I think that's been my realization is it's similar of like, if I'm going to spend time with them, like focus it in a way that is very meaningful. Sometimes that is we watch movies or watch YouTube or play games or do other stuff. I'm not saying it's all just this intense conversation, but if I start feeling myself distracted or like not wanting to be there, then I'm like, okay, check yourself. Should you just switch to something else and come back to this? Come hang out with the kid in an hour when you really are able to focus on them, or do you have something going on that you need to kind of deal with? So how do you think about this? And you have younger kids.
Yeah. So I have 11 and 13 year olds and they're getting to this point. Like we haven't hired a babysitter in a while, but they can't stay by themselves like overnight, like a couple hours. We can go to a dinner or a movie or something. Absolutely. The biggest improvement for me has been this like intentionality and like separation of like there's work time and then there's just kind of hanging out together time, unstructured. And there's like me being more intentional, like, hey, let's go play basketball with my son. Or, hey, let's go walk the dog after dinner with my daughter or something. And like to boot, my wife started working again about 4 months ago for the first time in 13 years since our daughter was born. And so that's been a pretty, that's an understatement. It's been a really big change in our kind of life and family dynamic is, wow, for, you know, several days a week now, she's just gone, right? And I'm the only one, like I'm working and like responsible for the kids. And so I've just had a lot more, this is it. And at 3 o'clock, I'm at least flexible because like the kids, I mean, the thing is like the kids come home and they're fried because they've been at school for 6 or 7 hours and they just want to hang out and play Fortnite or whatever. And so I will kind of mix that time is I'll just grab my laptop and go downstairs and sit on the couch and futz around. But what that means is like the really super important shit has to get done in the beginning of the day, because I know like I got to create this proposal. I got to follow up on this email. And that's just like leisure kind of work time. And so that's how I kind of overlap the two. And then at, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock, I'm like, cool, done. Put the computer away. The computer comes back to the office. So it's not like physically in the space where we are as a family. And then we do stuff. We've started cooking together a lot more. Like that's a really cool thing. And then, yeah, same here. We have a garden and my son is in charge of like getting the salad every night from the garden. And so there's just like little stuff like that, like empowering them with chores and activities that we can do together are really cool. So as much as you can kind of extrapolate that out, I think, into your life, it's positive.
Yeah, that's really good. And those kids will remember that for probably the rest of their life. Not every moment, but
yeah,
they will remember like, oh, I remember getting stuff from the garden. You know, if they do it 20, 50 times, whatever, it'll just kind of all be an amalgam of a single memory. But for sure, I have a bunch of stuff like that from my childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if your kids are really young, like I don't want to paint this of like, oh, if you have a 2 and a 4-year-old or 4 kids under 8 or whatever,
you're screwed.
Yeah, it's just a lot more challenging, you know. And you do, but that, it's even more reason to focus relentlessly and try to figure out the right things to work on. And in a business, to me, it's this dichotomy of risk versus certainty. It's like, what's the riskiest part of the business that needs founder level thinking? That's what I'm focused on. Anything that has certainty in a SaaS company, it's like, if you're 2 years into a SaaS, you know that someone can answer support requests. There's an SOP and most of them can be answered, right? There's a knowledge base, whatever. And frankly, writing code, I know it's a craft. I loved writing code and I was a craftsperson when I did it, but someone else can build that feature. But most other people can't design that feature.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like designing it or crafting it or saying exactly how it should operate, product level work is quite hard to find because your knowledge of your customer, there's founder level need there usually until you can hire. I mean, the first product person we hired, we were doing several million in ARR and his salary was $165,000. You know, I mean, it was really expensive. He makes more than that now. It's like, that's the level of like product person who can take stuff off your plate, mm-hmm. who's been doing it. But there are always elements of risk and always elements of certainty in a business. And I think that the certainty is that's where your comfort zone is. So unprodded, you will slide into the comfort zone because it's like, oh, look how much work I'm getting done. And then you work 12 hours on something that really should have either not gotten done or should have been delegated to someone else.
Yeah, I mean, the rule of thumb I use there is, and this comes from my coach, Mike Del Ponte, is like, do the work that's as close to the customer as you can. And typically that's sales, right? Like that's the best, right? It's like, can I go talk to this person and sell them a thing? After that, I agree. It's probably like either marketing or UX product design, because that's something that's like, that's more of a one to many. And then the things that are like way down on the scale are like, we grow my following on Twitter, or like, should I start a podcast? Like, I don't know, maybe, but like only if you think there's real potential direct impact. I think a lot of the time that we waste as founders are on like brand marketing. If you're at a few million, maybe you can allocate 20% of your marketing budget to brand marketing. But until then, like you got to be like hand to hand.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not a media company.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not what we are as bootstrap SaaS companies, and thinking you can do that quickly and it won't be a waste of time is pretty rough. Same thing with, oh, you should build an audience in order to build your, it's like, oh, that's a real long way to do it. I built an audience. I built multiple audiences over, you know, several years and it's, or, you know, 15 years or whatever. And it's way more time than sales you will make if it's for SaaS. But if you want to sell info products or courses, and that's another thing.
And I say it for all the people who are yelling at their phones right now. Like, I say that because we made that mistake.
Yeah.
We thought, hey, we'll do a bunch of brand marketing and it'll really result in a lot. And it didn't. And now we're much more one-to-one and we're growing faster than we were when we were a team of 15.
So let's switch it up since we, this is a great topic and I didn't want to cut it short because I think there's a lot to be said about it. But we did have other folks weigh in on Twitter about stuff and I want to get to their questions. Christopher Gimmer asked, I'd like to hear Craig talk a bit more about the coaching he's doing, the pros and cons of it. When he felt confident enough to start offering it, would he recommend other founders do it on the side? Does it detract from the main business, et cetera?
That's like four questions.
It is.
How did it come about? A bit of the focus that we talked about is we had just said no to a whole lot of things. And I found myself with a little bit of time. And I didn't have that thing where I said, ooh, if I had 10 more, I could spend these 10 hours in the week to do something and it would move the needle. So I said, well, I can spend these 10 hours in the week doing this other thing that I really enjoy. I'm pretty uniquely qualified to do, and it would be helpful and I can make a little bit of money. And so that's how it came about. And it was just very, very, very slow. I think I wrote like a LinkedIn and a Twitter post about it. Maybe I sent an email to the 200 people on my newsletter about it and got a couple of clients, got a couple of referrals from that. And so at this point have like a handful of folks that I'm coaching. And it is kind of the ICP is founders, typically SaaS founders, who are looking for help growing their business. So kind of sales and marketing. Yeah. And we work together every other week for an hour. And I want them to come with the biggest challenges they're having. And that can be anywhere from like review my cold email sequence to how do I think about managing this sales rep to here's my org chart. Where do you see the holes to I helped someone go through an acquisition where they were kind of acqui-hired. That was super cool. So, I mean, kind of all the shit that I've that you and I've done is like I've done this for folks who are looking to do it. Like just like we talked about before, it's like how can I kind of pay a little bit of money or how can they pay a little bit of money to get a few years ahead? Is it a distraction? Actually, I think I'm a much better founder now because of doing this, because part of it is I see a lot more, right? I see in the market how people are doing things. And so kind of like you have a lot of visibility to, you know, through Tiny Seed of all the companies, I have a much smaller percentage of that. But also like I got to walk the walk when I'm talking to a founder and they're like, oh, I was thinking about doing this and I'm thinking about doing that. I'm thinking about doing the other. I go do the thing that's as close to the customer as you can. And then I hang up the phone and I go futz off to do some SEO thing. I'm like, whoa, Jack, like that is not what you just said. So you gotta walk the walk. So yeah, I think it's not that much time. It's definitely not that much like mental overhead or stress because it's just a call. And I really, really, really like it. So there's that. It's like sometimes you gotta just like eat the ice cream. And that's a bit of it, what it is.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I would guess for some founders, it would be a distraction if they were in super grind, 10 hour, 12 hours a day, all consumed with their business, and they've never done coaching. Because just because you can do something doesn't mean you can coach other people on it. I've seen some coaches who are so sure of their point of view because they had a success or whatever, and they're like, no, this is how I want you to do it. So then every call, it's like, no, you should do this. You should do that. And it's like, that's not coaching.
Yeah.
Coaching is more like asking questions and figuring out, hey, what is really the best option? And usually there is no one best option. There's a couple options that are viable, you know, based on criteria. But I do think that you were in a spot, you're in a spot with Castles where you're, what are you, 5 years, 6 years in, seven mm-hmm. years, you know, depending on how far.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah. And at a certain point, as a business matures, it does require, I think, less and less. If you're doing it well, you are delegating and it requires less and less, even if it requires 8 hours a day from you still, less and less founder cycles. Because the risk, it comes back to risk versus certainty. It's like how much risk is left. There's a few areas of risk of meaning uncertainty or just like founder level thinking, but it's you're not making the same number of decisions on a day-to-day basis now than you were 4 years ago, 5 years ago, right?
Yep.
And so you have enough, it's that good glucose, as Dan Andrews says, to be able to coach. Because I tell you what, coaching is, I don't know if you find it this way, it's very tiring. And I say that kind of in a good way, but like it grinds me down in terms of you're going to present me. The only problems I get, because I do obviously do this through Tiny Seed, the only problems I get are ones that talented, gifted, handpicked founders don't know the answer to. So it's all the hardest problems. And that's like I consider that an honor and an amazing thing, but damn if it doesn't just burn through my brain cells. Cause I'm like, all right, tell me again and let's get it all in. Then I'm like, oh, this is hard and it matters. So I'm not gonna half-ass this decision. So like, let's dive in. I'm taking notes, I'm thinking through. It's kind of like whiteboarding a new feature where you're like going deep and you have a mental model in your head of a blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
So for me, coaching is like exhilarating. It keeps me in the game. Exactly what you're saying. You know, I have 192 companies and I'm like 4, 5, 6, 7 conversations a week, depending. But those ones I end and I'm like, whew, I need to go for a walk because I've just expelled like a lot of good talk about decision-making fatigue almost. It's like I'm in that helping them make, you know, hopefully the best decision. And so that comes back to if I was 8 to 10 hours a day on a startup and I didn't have that kind of energy to do it, I wouldn't coach. But I feel like you're in a pretty good spot where you were ready for it and you're highly gifted at it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't find it draining at all, which is a really good sign. I think I did a bit of it for free and found I really liked it. I learned a ton about this whole like giving advice versus asking questions. And I'm like way, way better kind of coach now than I was at the beginning. But yeah, it's exhilarating in a very kind of healthy, appropriate way. So yeah, I think to me, that's a really good sign that like it's probably a pretty good place for me.
Sounds like it, yeah. Our last question from Twitter comes from Matt Paulson, longtime listener of the show, and I presume of Rogue Startups as well, because he says, the thing that the two of you have in common is you both used to have podcast co-hosts and now you don't. And I think the implied question there is, maybe what was that experience like? And is it, you know, I don't know, I need to say better or worse with a co-host or without, but is it, you know, is that maybe hard? Was that a learning curve? What was it like for you to transition?
Yeah. So for context, I have a podcast called Rogue Startups, where started as just me and it was an interview based show. My third guest, I think, was Dave Rodenbaugh, who then became my co-host for the next 290 episodes, for the most part over 6 or 7 years. I mean, we're a very long time into it. I just published episode 314 this week. And
wow.
Yeah, so Dave and I largely had just a co-host kind of show where we just provide updates on kind of what's going on, a lot like you and Mike did, sometimes interviews, all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, really kind of through COVID, it was really hard for everybody. A little bit after, you know, Dave was like, man, I don't care to continue anymore, is I think what he would say. And to me, maybe like to you, like this is super important to me. Like it's if you want to use the term brand, it is probably my biggest kind of biggest aspect of my personal brand, which is, you know, has some importance. And so I was like, cool, man, like I want to continue. Are you okay with that? And he said, yeah, this is just not for me. So not for me anymore. So that's the context. And yeah, it was super hard. It was super hard. Like in a way, I was really excited because I was like, cool, I get to continue doing this thing that I really like that has been kind of the catalyst for a lot of my business stuff. But then I was like, whoa, like when you have a co-host, it is that kind of mirror of energy a lot, right? Like, hey, let's just hop on. I don't have a lot to talk about, but shit, Dave just did this thing. Like, cool, that's the episode for the week. Now it's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I got to find a guest. I got to find an interesting guest. Cause like the last thing I want is to get, I don't know, whoever to come on and talk about SEO again. But like, how can I find, I always say when we're advising our customers at Castos, like you got to find the person, you got to find Rob Walling, who everyone has heard on podcast, to talk about something you've never heard him talk about, which is pretty challenging. Or you got to find the person who no one has ever heard about that's going to blow their mind. That's a slightly easier, but still pretty challenging. Both those things just require a lot of effort. So I'm fortunate to be kind of networked pretty well, like in the entrepreneur podcast community, have probably taken a lot of similar steps to you of like, don't have as many guests as like rotating co-hosts. And then I get the most good feedback from my solo episodes. So aside from my episode with Jason Cohen that went out 2 weeks ago, I only get positive responses to my solo episodes. But they are soul sucking and I can only manage about one a month. So having a co-host of your podcast is by far the easiest way to have a podcast and not doing it is really hard, but I'm glad the podcast is continuing on. I guess that's the short version.
think I feel the same way. I agree fully with you that having someone else on the mic is, you can show up with almost nothing to talk about and fill time with pretty intelligent and entertaining things. And doing that solo, like you said, if you don't plan for it, you're on your own. And what are you doing then? You know, you're either answering questions or you're just coming up with a topic and then talking to nothing for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever. And you're right. It is, those are really hard, were really hard for me. They're less hard now. Now I have more confidence in my voice or some, there's just something that shifted where I was like, okay, I am just going to say, I used to filter a lot more. If I'm honest, I was like, oh, what if I show them my real personality or what I really, maybe I shouldn't be so opinionated, but maybe this will make someone mad. And it's like, I'm not going out with super scathing hot takes or anything, but you might notice that over the past probably 4 years, 5 years since I went solo, I have just become more opinionated about certain things, you know, about certain anti-patterns and certain success patterns that I see over and over. And that makes it almost easier because I don't have to censor myself as much on the solo episodes where I used to like start, I would say a whole paragraph, and then I'm like, oh, what if that makes someone feel bad? I'm going to just, you know, editor, just cut that whole thing. So it was just a start, stop, start, stop. It wasn't that fun.
Yeah.
And I was always worried, like, well, what am I going to talk about? What topic can I possibly talk about? And now I have this huge Trello board because stuff just hits me, right? I can, as I consume things, I listen to audiobooks, I hear other podcasts like yours and the other ones I listen to. Oftentimes it's something completely outside of startups, like the Comic Lab podcast, where it's these two artists that are independent comic guys, and they publish their own books, like not through publishers, like they do Kickstarters and Patreons and all that. They'll say something and I'm like, oh, that totally applies to startups. And I've never heard.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had like three of those probably, you know, in the past 6 months where I brought it on the show. Then there's even like Dungeons and Dragons podcasts or metaphors with games or something. I'm like, oh yeah, that is a, you know, is a thing. The thing I've really enjoyed about it, I think, is I definitely wanted to experiment with a lot of formats and just experiment with things. I mean, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, you've heard me bring in like Beatles music and what were the other, I forget who else I brought on, but you know, different, like I'll talk about a song and then I'll like bring the song on. And it's like that, it's super cool when you listen to it, but it's kind of a weird thing to do on a startup podcast for the first time. And it was something when I had a co-host, I was like, oh, do I check with him? Is this like a, so is it weird to do a solo episode if I have a co-host? Is that like pulling the spotlight? You know, there was all this stuff that I was concerned about experimenting with. And I think that was maybe to the detriment of the variety of the show, because after Mike stepped back, I tried a lot of stuff and actually a bunch of formats that I don't do anymore, but I tried them and they were forgettable. You know, the formats, people just weren't that interested. The ones that stick are the ones that people comment on, right? And they say, oh, I really like that. And similarly, the solo episodes always resonate a bit of, you know, it resonates with somebody.
Yeah. If I could, I think the thing that brings this full circle to business is nothing's forever. You know, even you won't do this podcast forever, probably, right? Or you won't be the host of this podcast forever. I don't know. Maybe I'll run Castos forever. I don't know. But like, you won't be at your job forever. You won't have the same co-founder forever. Like maybe you'll stay married forever. That's cool. Like I hope I do. But I think to go into most of these things expecting it to be forever is setting yourself up for disappointment. Going into it a little eyes wide open and setting expectations like with a co-host or with a co-founder. Like that's, you talk about like, hey, if you go into a co-founder agreement, have like shit in writing. Maybe with a podcast co-host, like it doesn't need to be a legal document, but like an email to say like, hey, this is it. We're going to check in once a quarter. If anybody wants out, that's cool. With this is the process. Like I didn't have that because Dave and I just like started podcasting and kind of backed our way into a partnership. If I did it again, I would be a little more intentional to say like, this is the situation now. It probably will change. And these are the parameters around how it can change. Just so there's no hard feelings. And there weren't with Dave and I, and I don't think there were with you and Mike. It was just the right time to start doing something different, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, I like that. Nothing is forever. Everybody sells eventually.
Yeah.
Everybody sells eventually. Never thought MailChimp would sell. And you're right, podcasts either fade or they change. Different co-hosts, like Calacanis on This Week in Startups, had Molly Wood as a co-host, then Molly Wood disappeared and there was never anything mentioned about it. I mean, she stopped being co-host suddenly and there was never a conversation about it. And now I think he has a new co-host, but it's just like, that's kind of a thing. But what is he, like 1200 episodes in or 13? I don't know. Right. He's a lot of episodes. And it's like, that's just how things happen when you do them for 14 years. They do change. And this podcast is episode 700, whatever, 19, and it's 14 years. Yeah, about 14 years in, similarly. And so that, just expect that you roll with it or you quit at some point, and that's okay. There's a pretty good book called Quit. What's her name? She's the poker player, Annie Duke.
Yeah.
It just came out. I will admit, I could summarize the book in about a 3-minute loom. There were like some key takeaways that I thought these were really good. And there was a lot of stuff that I was just like, eh. But if you can read a summary or listen to the audiobook or whatever, it's interesting and kind of like a, not a justification, but a defense of like, hey, sometimes you should quit. Mm-hmm. There are times when you should stop doing things. And it's like, it's a good reminder because society somehow has this big stigma around it. But I know some people where them quitting either a business or a relationship or what, some other effort they've done for a long time was actually the kickstart of like a whole new chapter in their life. And so it's always something to keep in mind. Craig Hewitt, thanks so much for joining me, man. You are the Craig Hewitt on Twitter and craighewitt.me if folks want to check out your email newsletter. Thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to Craig Hewitt for spending a few minutes with me today and providing you with your weekly dose of Startups for the Rest of Us. I hope this is an amazing week for you, both on the personal front and also in terms of your business goals. Thanks for listening this week and every week. This is Rob Walling signing off from episode 720.